Okay, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is great to be here. I love being with alcoholics. As you know, I was away in California. It was wonderful being there. I'm a low maintenance guy. I like alcoholics. I like hanging out with alcoholics. I like going to AA meetings. I like sponsoring people. I like being says, hey, I like everything about this deal that we have going for us here. And I've been around for, it'll be 33 years in January if I make it. And I just love this deal. Love life the way it is. And I even have really good friends and close friends and acquaintances that are not alcoholic. I mean, I feel sorry for them, but, you know. I mean, you don't have to have a chip in your pocket. You know, one of the things I learned about Alcoholics Anonymous is after I broke free of the, you know, when you're first in here, the first few years, you're like, it's like an AA coffin, you know. You're like, there's us and the earth people, you know. And, you know, I found that, you know, the earth people have same sort of problems that we have. They just don't drink or drug, and they destroy themselves in other ways, or they live lives of, you know, quiet desperation, or they're miserable, or they hurt themselves in other ways, ways that you don't get arrested for. You know, they don't arrest you for driving while lonely. They don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. Or, you know, you can do quite well in a job and earn money and put kids through college and be a thumb-sucking crybaby and feel like you want to kill yourself anyway. You know, you could have a pretty miserable life and be functional. You'd be a functional alcoholic. You'd be a functional human being and feel lousy about yourself. And we're lucky. Because if we don't get this thing, I mean, the wheels come off and we crash and we burn and we die and then we, like the phoenix, we rise from the ashes. We get to go here, come in here, and join a whole fellowship of crazy people and have a great time. And they got no place to join out there, except a lot of them get involved in churches, which is great. We get involved in that. Our big book encourages that, and that's a good thing too. But imagine those poor people who are out there just going home to work, home to work, home to work, just not having any rhyme, reason, or explanation as to why they're even on the planet. And having the same worries and anxieties that you guys have, you know. And they don't even have alcohol, you know, to sort of dull the deal. Or drugs, they don't even have any anesthesia going for them. They got to go through it sober. So it's really good to be here. I was out in California. I know Tommy did a great job when I was missing. And I have, you know, being around for a while and having traveled different places, I have different groups I go to. And I have one group in particular I like to go to in California. It's a men's meeting, and we meet at early in the morning, around 6 o'clock in the morning, a bunch of us, and then we go to this meeting. And so I sort of feel at home. You know, I mean, when I 25 years ago when I started going to this meeting, I'm in Los Angeles. I'm not a great fan of Los Angeles. I love California. I love the weather. I'm not a great fan of Los Angeles. It's even more crowded than we got going here in the expressways, the 405 will kill you. But I was out there, and you know, when you're in a huge city and you don't have your friends there, you sort of feel alone and you feel like you don't know anybody. And I went to this meeting 25 years ago, and I walked in, and it was an AA meeting. It's very solid, a lot of guys with 30, 40 years and that kind of stuff, and a lot of newcomers, you know, which is sort of good too, you know. It's a good mixture to have guys with like 40 years that are solid and are focused and understand what the deal is, and then you got the guys you know, 3 or 4 months or 3 or 4 days that pretty much want to kill themselves or rip, rape, or run or something like that. It's sort of, the whole thing sort of holds together, and it's pretty neat. And so when I went to this group, and here I am in Los Angeles, I really didn't know anybody. This is 25 years ago, and I went to this group, and you know, group of men, and I walked in there. You know, my name's Russell. I'm an alcoholic from Carl Gables, and they introduced themselves, and then we went out and we had breakfast after the meeting, and you know, we had coffee before the meeting. I started going to this group, and I said, "Wow!" In less than an hour, I went from, you know, feeling alone in this town to saying, "Man, I could live here. I could live in this town, you know, no problem," because I just met this group of people. What a great deal, you know what I mean? What an incredible way of life. You can move anywhere just about where they have Alcoholics Anonymous, a meeting like this and that kind of stuff, and just sort of fit right in and do your thing, and it's a great deal. So I had a lot of fun, a lot of interesting things happened out there. technically we're on step 10. Who knows? We'll see what the deal is going to be. I'm gonna share a little bit about that deal. I want to go over some stuff that, you know, I always go over so you can understand where I'm coming from. I know we have a lot of people here who have been through some of the steps with me, and so you sort of know where my head's at. And but it doesn't hurt, to, especially without books. Repetition doesn't necessarily hurt. You know, it sometimes is helpful. I came in and I had my last drink January 25th, 1981, and I'm a guy who ended up drinking against his will, and if you're an alcoholic, that probably happened to you. You know, where you wake up and, I mean, how long does it take? Think about this. How long does it take when, do you remember a time in your life before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous where you thought to yourself, and for me, I've got to be honest with you, I can't put a date or a time on this, but I know it sort of happened, where you started thinking that you might have a drinking problem? I mean, I'm not saying that you admitted to having a drinking problem or you even knew you had a drinking problem, but where it occurred to you that there was a possibility that you might be drinking too much. I mean, in my mind, and I may be wrong, I think that happened about a year or two before I actually stopped drinking. You understand what I'm saying? It wasn't like a week before, 2 weeks, it was like a year or two. You know, and not that you're even close to stopping drinking. I mean, you're not going to do anything as drastic as that, or even considering that you got a drinking problem. But, you know, it's just sort of occurring to you that, you know, maybe it's getting like that. You know, that's around the time where you start, you like switch from wine to beer. Or yeah, you do this thing, you stop doing mixed drinks because somebody told you, as long as you don't mix them, you know, drink scotch straight, you know, then you'll be okay. Or you don't drink on an empty stomach. You're like, this must have something to do with the way I'm managing my booze, or like it says in the book, doesn't have a whole section of the book, like we take a vacation, we don't take a vacation, we do this, we, you know, so that, I went through that deal, you know, and that's, you know, the first thing is sort of like the awareness, and here's the deal, we all know now, since we've been here for a while, that alcohol consumption, you ready for this, is but a symptom of the disease. Now, if you're brand new, I understand I'm going to be talking about a lot of things. I'm going to go real fast, and I'm just sort of like, we're on the 10th step, and I mean, we're not on the first step, and so there may be things I'm talking about that you'll have to read about or learn about or may not understand. I get that, and you'll have to forgive me. I'm sort of glossing over a lot of stuff, but ultimately, when we get in here, a lot of us understand what the big book says, and I'd like to think what I'm sharing with you is scriptural. That is, it's right out of the big book, but it's also part of my life and things I've learned, which is sort of like, which is helpful to me to understand this stuff, that the drinking that brought me in here that I thought was the big problem and indeed was the big problem, okay? I mean, you don't get anywhere unless you stop the drinking thing. And of course, you can understand why I would think drinking was the problem, the only problem here, because the name of the place is like Alcoholics Anonymous, gives you a big hint that alcohol has something to do with it. How was I to know that everybody in here is not drinking? Huh? Go figure that. We're in a group called Alcoholics Anonymous, and like nobody drinks. Nobody has a drinking problem, you know what I mean? As a matter of fact, if you have a drinking problem, we can't even deal with you. We can't even deal with you until you stop drinking, you know what I mean? Then you got to go to detox, you got to go to something, or you got to drink. You know, my sponsor used to say, don't rob an alcoholic of his desperation. I'm not to deal with a guy who won't stop drinking. Keep drinking, you know, just drink. You'll eventually stop or die. It'll work out. Alcohol will do it for you, you know? You get a yes butter or an if only or you don't understand it. Hey, no problem. You're right. I agree. Have a nice life. Go. He'll come back or die or not or go to jail. Eventually, he'll sort of crawl back in, you know, with a different attitude. And what'll get him here? It's the drinking that gets him here. You know, it's like it says in the big book, it says, how do we get a new perspective through 100 forms of fear, self, what does it say? Humiliation. And the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. Crushing of our self-sufficiency. We think the humiliation. That's what got us in here. Everybody who's been in here, you don't get in here riding the wave. You don't win the lotto and get $20 million and get the Playboy bunny and riding the crest and the big car and feeling all puffed up and have the great job and say, man, I feel so great. I wonder what's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think I'm going to check that thing out, you know? They're foreclosing on the house. Your wife or husband has kicked you out. You're going to jail. You're being indicted. You're like flying in your own vomit on the floor. Things aren't going well, you know what I mean? Some court orders you here, you know? We come here because we're not humble. We come here because we're humble. You know, well, that I hate to say this to you. I don't know if you recognize it yet. That sort of sets up a pattern. That's not like a one-time deal. That's like a pattern. You know, there's a possibility. It's just a possibility. Like I said to Tommy, you know, who said, you know, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I think I'm just crazy, you know. You could be both. There is a possibility that the alcohol, as they say in the book, is but a symptom of the problem. Drinking a lot of alcohol is symptomatic of the fact that you've got a lot of problems because you have a real problem with something called sobriety. You can't stand sober in the real world. Now, you could do sober like in, what's your name?
Gabby.
Now, if we were to place Gabby on Planet Gabby, she'd be fine. She wouldn't even need meetings. On Planet Gabby, everybody thinks the way she does, and they all like her. And everybody does what she tells them to do. You know? And she's in charge. And she's in total control. And everything works out the way she wants. And they all sort of think like her. They all do things her way. You know, on Planet Gabby, you know, everything works out. There's no problems. There's no frustrations. Except every once in a while, she's got to drink out of sheer boredom. You know? And but you know, you see, the problem is we all live on the planet Earth. And whatever that thing that God gave regular human beings to deal with traffic and bosses and bills. Anybody have electricity in their house? No, you got electricity? You ever notice, you know, I paid the FBNL bill last month. I just got another one today. What is that? What is that? It's like every month it comes in. The water, you know, last night... You know, we put the dishes in the dishwasher. You ready? Again today. This has like been going on forever. I hate reality. It's always, it never stops. It's like the traffic, everything you've gone through in the last, I'm 64 years old. All the crap I've gone through in the last, it hasn't gotten better. It's still going on. How can you stop, you know? Drinking used to help, but now, you know, it doesn't. I can't do that deal anymore. So, you see, the problem is, if you're an alcoholic and you're living on the planet and you're alive and you're on the planet, you may have a problem with something called sobriety. How many people are sober here tonight? Well, now you see, now you understand the problem, you know what I mean? Things were going great when I could drink and get the hell out of here, you know, because it's sort of like a form of suicide. It's the greatest form of suicide because you can, like, kill yourself but not really stop breathing. You know what I mean? It's like you kill yourself for like 6 or 8 hours and then you wake up again. It's like you drink and you're like dead. And you're for about 6 or 8 hours. And you got all these other things they talk about in the big book. What does it say? Fear of people and of economic insecurity. You know, people say to me, well, I was never scared of people. I used to drink in bars with 300 people. I said, well, if you're not scared of people, why'd you always have to get drunk when you were around them? Why were you always saying to your sponsor, you know, I have to go to a wedding. What do I do if they ask me to drink? How come whenever you had to dance with a girl, you had to get drunk? Or have sex, you had to get drunk? If you're not scared of people and their judgment, why were you always getting drunk around them or just thinking about them? You know, it says the wrongdoings of others, fancy to real, have the power to actually kill. I mean, this is the way we handle life, you know? And so I, of course, I start out with that deal like we all start out with. Where I started thinking, well, maybe I have a drinking problem. Well, between the time of thinking that you might have a drinking problem, maybe you have a drinking problem, and the time you actually put the plug in the jug and say, I need help, I can't stop you. That's what I said. I said, I remember what I said. I looked somebody in the eye, and this is what I said. I need help, I can't stop drinking. That's what I said. That's the exact words. I need help. I can't stop drinking. You know how long, you know what I had to do to myself over what period of time I had to go to do my, and I was not a dumb guy. I, you know, bright actually will kill you. Intelligence will kill you in this deal. Because I'm a rationalizer. I tell myself rational lies. There's reasons, you know, there was a great line I heard, which I use all the time. I've adopted as my own because it's so true. It says, I stopped drinking when the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards. And, you know, because if you're an alcoholic, no matter how bad your life gets, no matter how crappy things get, you can somehow rationalize yourself into thinking things just aren't that bad. Yeah, I'm broke. My wife left me. I'm here with my kids. You know, they just turned off the lights. But hey, it could be worse. It's not that bad. You know what I mean? I mean, I can just... you know, finally it gets to the point where you have to look in the mirror and say, who am I kidding? So how, I don't know what that was for you. I don't know how much time had to pass from the time when you started thinking to yourself, maybe I have a drinking problem, to the point where you got to the point where you say, I need help, I can't stop drinking. But for me, I think it was like a year and a half, 2 years. It was like, it was not a short deal. It was a long time. And you wanted some, a lot of bad, it wasn't like I figured it out. It wasn't like, well, I'm so brilliant, I'll just figure this thing out. It was like I figured it out with the help of incredible amounts of mess that happened in my life, which is probably why you not only have to be pals over alcohol, that's probably why there's a requirement that your life becomes unmanageable. What do you think about that? I think that unmanageable stuff has something to do with your realizing that you're pals over alcohol. You know, I remember many times I'd walk into the bar and I'd jokingly say, and I think I actually believed it, I'd say, he'd say, well, you're drinking. He says, well, I'm an alcoholic. I drink for the noble art of getting bombed. And I thought it was a joke. And I said, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I drink for the noble art of getting bombed. You see, you can joke about it. You can laugh about it if you still think your life is manageable. I still have a car. I still have a job. I still have a gal. All I needed was a gal. Just give me one crazy gal, crazy enough to hang out with me and sort of like adore me, and I could go on forever. And there be a lot of crazy gals in this world, okay? Present company accepted, sort of. You know what I mean? This is Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't it? But you understand what I'm saying? I mean, I can keep this thing going for a long period of time. So I finally get to the point where I admit that I'm powerless over alcohol, my life is becoming unmanageable, and all these bad things happen to me. And a lot of these bad things that happen to you have to do with alcohol, with drinking alcohol. You somehow put together, you know, I got all these things happening to me and it has something to do with alcohol, you know, whether it's a DUI, whether it's showing up, or whatever it is. So now you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, when you first come to AA, I don't know about you, it's like wonderful. You can't say, where it really gets wonderful is when you stop drinking and the obsession leaves, you know. It's not so wonderful when you stop drinking and for 3 weeks you're thinking about the drink. When you're still thinking about it, because you know you got the obsession, because you're not only addicted to alcohol, you're addicted to the alcoholic life, to the friends, to the bar, to the bar rooms, to the light, to the bullshit, as Ray O'Keefe used to say. You're addicted to the way of thinking, but you're either thinking about drinking or you're thinking about how you're not drinking, which is almost as bad as thinking about drinking. You're just like every day, oh, I didn't have a drink this hour, I didn't have a drink this day, and you know, it's all about the booze, the booze, the booze. But there came a time in my life where, like they said, and I'm not going to go through a great, where the obsession lifted. I went through my day, my first day, where I not only didn't drink, I didn't think about not drinking. I think it occurred to me at the end of the day, it says, man, I haven't thought about drinking all day. That's like an amazing thing. That's like a rocket ship into the fourth. When you go through one day and you say, man, I haven't even... Because, you know, I was one of these guys where I couldn't envision life without drinking. I couldn't envision life without drinking. I couldn't envision continuing to drink. I couldn't envision life without drinking. And now I go through this day and I'm not thinking about drinking. It was like incredible. But then, of course, as soon as that happens, you're sort of good for a while. You can coast on that for a little while. And then all of a sudden, all of a sudden, like it says, men and women, we drink because we like the effect produced by alcohol, that we're restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So the real problem is that sober, we tend to be restless, irritable, discontent, in a state of dis-ease, just living life. You know, we're out there, we got jobs like other people, we got to earn money, we got bills, we got stuff going on, we got relationships, we got wives, we got husbands, we got kids, all sorts of things are going on. I mean, tires are getting flat, you know, oil has to be changed. All sorts of crap going on, and we just don't, and somehow, some way, we're just not fit for life. Somehow, some way, over a period of time, it all winds up like, why me? Why is this happening to me? Why do I have to all do this? They don't know who they're screwing up. Who the hell do they think they are? You know, it just somehow winds up in self-pity or anger or fear. Fear is all over the place, although I don't realize I'm in fear. And I can't admit it, I'm in fear because that's the other fear. I worry about what you're going to think about me. I don't want you to think I'm in fear. I don't want you to think I'm broke. I don't want you to think I'm worried about money. I don't want you to think about it. I just want to think about, you know, I'm just looking, I'm comparing my insides with your outsides, and everybody looks better than the way I feel. And then you're sitting there and you're not even drinking and you're going crazy with 15,000 voices in your head. all saying bad things about yourself and other people. I mean, one guy said, "Well, I think you have a split personality." I said, "Man, I wish I could get it down to two. I'd be okay, you know?" I mean, and then you discover somewhere between years, you know, like 1 and 10, that this is like a serious disease that has to do with the thinking. And how do you turn off the thinking? How do you turn off the voice in your mind that you're driving the car that's telling you you're an idiot? How do you turn? I mean, who's telling you more that you're an idiot and you don't deserve to live and you're stupid and it'll never be okay than you? Talking to you about what you think about you. And where is that voice coming from? It's not coming from, it's not being beamed in from Venus. It's coming from inside you. And even if you're not thinking about that, you got the radio on, you got TV on, you got things going on. You think that voice, wherever that voice came from, you think that deal goes away? It's like Muzak in the background. That's why. And then you start discovering that this disease has, it says, unless an alcoholic, here's a line from the book, accepts his alcoholism, whatever that is, because I'm an alcoholic, I have alcoholism, and I'm not drinking. You see, here's the deal. Whether you're drinking enough or not has nothing to do with alcoholism. Alcoholism continues. As a matter of fact, if you're not an alcoholic, I have a real simple deal for you. Just stop drinking. You don't even have to go to these meetings. Just stop drinking. Everything will be wonderful. But if you're like me, you stop drinking, and that's when the fun begins. You know what I mean? That's when the 3 o'clock in the morning, worrying about what's going to happen to you, trying to control people, worrying about what they're thinking about you, and that other voice in your head that says you know they're thinking about you and they're talking about you behind your back. Man, you're at that table and you have to go to the bathroom, but you're not moving because you know if you stay there, they can't talk about you behind your back. But sure, you're laughing. I know you're laughing. You think it's funny. You don't know what it's like. But let me tell you something. You ever been in that situation where you stay with people that you don't like and you can't stand? You know, and maybe you have to go to bed because you're worried about if you leave, they're going to talk about you behind your back. And the thing you're worried about most is what they... I mean, I've spent more money that I don't have buying things I don't need to impress people I don't like than you can possibly imagine. Credit cards go through the roof. Stuff happens. What? That's alcoholism. You're in class and the teacher says, does anybody have a question? You have no idea what the teacher said. And you have a question, but you ain't raising your hand because nobody's going to laugh at you. Because you know it's going to be a stupid question. Or anybody says know the answer, and you know the answer, but you ain't raising your hand because what if you're wrong? And you ain't running for vice president or president, and you ain't asking this gal out or that guy out, or you ain't going to do this and you ain't going to do that. You're not going to apply for this job, you'll apply for that job, or you'll stay in this relationship even though it's crappy, and you won't go to that relationship because you don't deserve it, because you know no matter what happens, you're probably not going to get anything better. Your entire life is dictated by the fear of how inferior you are, and you know that's why Carl Menninger said alcoholics in Man Against Himself are individuals who are out to destroy themselves. Because how well are you going to do in life whether you drink or not drinking if you think you're a piece of crap and you don't deserve any better? Why do alcoholics stay in situations that are inimical to their health and well-being, and they can't leave? Because they figure, well, I know it's a crappy situation. I know it's a crappy job. I know it's a crappy deal. But you know something? I'm a crappy piece of crap anyway. What am I going to do out there if I go anyway? Nobody's going to hire me. Nobody's going to do anything. I'm not good enough. Of course, you're not going to tell anybody that. You're not even going to hint at that sort of stuff. Now, I'm not talking about you guys because I can tell you're like the upper crust of alcoholics. And I'm talking about guys like me. You understand what I'm saying? I'm talking about my way of thinking. Of course, if you're an alcoholic, part of the disease is also that you think you're unique. You think nobody thinks the way you do, you know? You go to about 8 or 9 or 10,000 AA meetings, you sponsor a few hundred guys and everything, and you realize that we're all twins. That's when you realize you want a good AA meeting, all you have to do is be sincere and tell them the truth about how you feel about yourself, and that's it. 18 people in a pigeon will come up to you and say, man, you've been talking about me. You were talking about me. You were looking right at me. I said, you're right. I was talking about me, but we're twins. Don't you understand? That's why I know more about you and your thoughts than you know about you, because I know about me. That's the secret in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're here long enough, I'm learning about more about me every day. The more I know about me, the more I know about you, which is a scary, you ought to be scared about that deal. It's a scary deal, you know what I mean? That's why people can sponsor other people. So in any event, you know, they have this, and so I come in here and I have to learn just like you guys, and you know, it's interesting. How do you learn you're an alcoholic? Because you go through all sorts of pain and difficulty, and you're pummeled, and it changes your perspective of things. Well, and we've talked about time in the oven, and
And you know, the book of James, which is real important to these guys. In the book of James, the first chapter of the book of James, it says, rejoice when you have trials and tribulations, because perseverance through trials and tribulations with faith leads to maturity. It makes you mature in your faith, and it gives you wisdom, you know, and gives you security, and you lose fear. And we talk about how you lose fear in this book through faith. And that's what we look at. There is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. See to what your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to you and countless others. It's all about God. Find a relationship with God. That relationship, God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. He is the central factor in our life. That's a great fact. Is this and nothing less. That's what's going to rock you to the fourth dimension of existence. That's where you're going to experience much of heaven. You know, that's what it's all about. When we sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need as long as we keep close to him and perform his work well. We lose fear of today, yesterday, tomorrow, we were reborn. That's all AA, that's what it's all about. Above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the root of our problem. That's the root of your problem. The drinking is not the root of the problem. The drinking is what happens because of the problem. Because you're selfish, because you're self-centered, because all you do is think about yourself and worry about yourself all day long, because you have 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, you step on the toes of others, you make those phone calls, you send those emails, you give them the silent treatment, you say that sarcastic crap, you, instead of ignoring something, an insult, or ignoring a supposed insult, you know, harp about it. All you do is think about it. You do that crap. You step on their toes. They retaliate. You start fights. Your cell phone will riot. Nobody can talk to you. Somebody tries to talk to you and you say, you don't understand. Take your own inventory. You don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear the truth. You know, that's what the problem is with the alcoholic. You're defiant in the extreme. That's why they broke away from the Oxford group. They used to have the Oxford group, an evangelical Christian group. That's what we come out of. But in the Oxford group, they would have meetings, discussion meetings. They would read the Bible. That's what they used the first 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some guy would say something, and then they'd have something called correction. Correction. Where people would correct them. They'd exhort them. They'd rebuke them with love. They'd say, no, you can't do that. They would have crosstalk. The alcoholics had to leave. They couldn't handle it. I used to say to my sponsor, I'm sensitive. He says, no, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. You know, the alcoholics couldn't handle it because they were childish. They couldn't handle somebody telling them the truth. They got upset, so they broke away. And we carry that tradition forward in Alcoholics Anonymous. Isn't it wonderful? There's no crosstalk. We think that's great. I guess it is great. You know why we have it? You know what that is? That's a mark. That's a badge telling us we can't handle crosstalk because we'll be running out of here sucking our thumbs. Because we're childish. That's why we have no crosstalk in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why we don't do that. Not because we're well, because we're sick. We can't handle crosstalk. Somebody looks at us and says, you know, maybe you have a problem with lust. Maybe you ought to consider that. You say, take your own freaking inventory. Who do you think you are talking to me? That's why we have sponsors. We give them permission to take our inventory. This isn't a disease for well. I mean, this is not exactly well people's anonymous here. What are you laughing for, Victoria? Come on, give me a break. So you understand what I'm saying? So that's the deal we're dealing with. Now you can get rid of the drinking. How are you going to get rid of the thinking? It says above everything. Listen, I'm just quoting the book. I'm just quoting the book. It happens to be my life too. You know how many years it takes. If you think it takes 2 or 3 years to go from I think I might have a drinking problem to saying I need help, I can't stop drinking. You would be amazed at how long it takes to go from I think I have a coveting or greed problem, you know, or worrying about money problem, to saying, how do I stop thinking about it? Yeah, I mean, it may take 20 or 30 years to realize you have a greed problem, to realize you have a coveting problem, to realize you have a lust problem, to realize you have a... Man, the problem is because you know something, because you can sort of live your life because they don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. Because you don't lose your job because you're lusting. Now, the truth of the matter is, you do lose your job for that stuff somehow, but it takes a long period of time. There are politicians that are out of office now that are kicked out. There are people that lose their jobs, that ruin their careers because of this stuff. But it isn't like against the law. It isn't like alcohol. It works a little more subtle. So if you think it takes a long time to understand the alcohol deal, you have no idea. You know when it says, We must get rid of our old ideas. The result is nil until we let go, absolutely. The old ideas that we have that we don't even know are problems, unless and until an alcoholic understands his accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, the consequences of being an alcoholic, until you understand what has to happen to you over a period of time, the crushing over and over again. How many times do you have to get hurt or put yourself in the same position over and over and over again, and hopefully get a sponsor that tells you 17,000 times that maybe it's because you're greedy, maybe it's because you're lustful, maybe it's because you're not concentrating on God. How many times does that have to happen until you say, you know, I have a problem, and then you're ready to do something about it? And do you think it happens to all alcoholics? No, maybe what, 1 in 200? 1 in 300? Most people are just sort of, most people are just doing AA light. You know, there's two recovery places. There's two things going on here, and I've sort of accepted this. Now, I happen to love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love AA. I love the book. I'm not going to change it. I couldn't change it anyway. But AA, the way it is right now, is not AA the way it was between 35 and 39. I know that. I've read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I defy anybody to read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. They say, rarely have I seen a person fail as thoroughly followed our path in 1939. Their path is what they did between 35 and 39. You read what they did. You read about getting down on their knees. You read about them accepting God in their life on their knees before they can get to the meeting. You read the stuff they talk about, the prayer time, the quiet time, and the books they read in the Bible. You read about what they were doing and the results they were getting from that, and then you look at what's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous today. You look at what's happening today. And if you think, if you honestly can rationalize and think the same thing that's going on today in AA is what they're going on there, I'll tell you, I don't know what to tell you. You know what Bill, but I understand, I accept it for what Bill Wilson says it is. A spiritual kindergarten. A spiritual kindergarten where the most it's going to do for you right now is it's going to stop you drinking. And maybe some guy or gal come in here and stay sober 40 years and then die, but always sort of be miserable. You know, just shoot for sort of like that, you know, that place where they don't hurt anybody and they're just sort of living a life, but never really experience that rocket ship ride. And maybe that's what AA is about. You come in here, you do a little AA light, you pick a chip up at the end of every year, you know what I mean? That's what it's all about, not drinking, right? You killed 17 people and a monkey, hey, but you haven't had a drink, pick up a chip, you know? I mean, maybe it's all, that's it. There's nothing wrong with that. And you know, in one sense, it is true that not drinking is the most important. I still believe today, like my sponsor said, no matter what goes on in your life, if you haven't had a drink, you're a success as an alcoholic, and that's true. But also on the other stand, we can read in the book, in the parts of the sixth step, where it talks about, we know there's a separation, because it tells us there's a separation. In the 12 and 12, it says there's a step that separates the men from the boys. It tells us there's a step where some people will never go beyond that step and will stay right there at that point, and there are other people that will go beyond. And what happens is it only really appears over a period of 10, 20, 30 years. And somehow over a period of 10, 20, and 30 years, not over a period of weeks, you know, puppies all look like puppies. You know, little dogs all look like little dogs. When you start getting about 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years out, and you start looking about AA, you see a whole bunch of people dropping off drinking. You see other people that are still hanging in there, but you want to know something, they always have problems, they're always complaining problems, there's always something wrong. You see other people, they may not be complaining about problems, they may be sitting in the back quiet, but you want to know something, they're not happy, they're not smiling, they're not happy with their life. They got 10, 12, 15, 20 years, but they are not rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. As a matter of fact, they don't like people that are rocking they're the ones that criticize and talk and are backbiting people. And they talk about other people behind their back a lot because they don't like the fact that people are coming in here and they're happy and they're getting something out of this that they're not. So instead of saying, how can I get some of that? They either deny it or say it's not happening or it's a bunch of crap or they talk bad stuff about them. You know, and that's in here too. And what happens is you find that there's two fellowships in here. There's the fellowship we all belong to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous because the only thing you need to be in that is the desire to stop drinking. You don't even need an honest desire. They took that word out, just the desire to stop drinking. And there's another fellowship. It's in the last page of the book. It's called the Fellowship of the Spirit. That line actually comes from one of the letters of the Apostle Paul where he talks about the fellowship of the Holy Spirit. And I'll tell you what, there is a different requirement to be belonging to the fellowship of the Spirit. They talk about the fellowship of the Spirit. They say people who belong to the fellowship of the Spirit, in the last page it says, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Did you even know you crave fellowship? You know, alcoholics crave fellowship. That's why we come to means that we crave fellowship. Even as we deny that we crave fellowship, we crave spiritual fellowship. Even as we're sitting alone in the back saying, this is a bunch of crap, and we crave fellowship. And who we fellowship tells us a lot about who we're going to be. The man or woman you're going to fellowship with is going to determine what books you read, and that's going to determine where you're going to be 5 years from now. And so what happens, one of the things that so ultimately while you get in this and while life is working on you, man, those FP&L bills are coming in, maybe you're getting fired, maybe the economy's going bad, stuff is happening around you that you have no control over. How you deal with that, whether you get deeper into this thing and deeper in and find it, that's how you find out about your old ideas. That's how you find out about your old ideas. That's where you find out about what's really going on with you inside. I'll tell you, when you really work this thing, when you're working on your life and what's going on with you right now, and one of the greatest things, and I think this is what I want to talk about in that last few minutes, of the 10th step, is the spiritual axiom. The spiritual axiom to me of the 10th step is probably, I think, the most powerful tools in life. What an axiom is? An axiom means it's something, I used to be involved in mathematics. It's something that we do not question. We do not question this. This is the spiritual axiom if you're an Alcoholics Anonymous. If you haven't heard it, you're going to hear it the first time now. It's right in step 10. It says the spirit, and let me just tell you a little story about something about how this deal works. When you've done three steps, one, step two, three, four, it tells you a little bit about yourself, five, you confess a little bit about yourself. When you start getting to step six, when you start getting to those old timer steps, step six and seven, where it says the key to step six is you, the man or the woman who is intently trying to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. When you get into the step where it talks about seeking perfection, which is of God, which is impossible, but you try for it anyway. The Apostle Paul used to say things like that. He says, I reach for the goal. He says, even though I fall back, I reach for perfection. When you get into a step where it talks about devoting your life to becoming and to being in the image and likeness of your creator, when you get into that step, that kind of stuff, that's different than not drinking. Listen, that's a different deal than not drinking. That's a different, growing in the image and likeness of your creator and seeking perfection and getting your teeth into that and making God the central factor of your life, let me tell you something, that's a different animal than the guy who comes to the room and picks up the chip and says, and pats people on the back, and they have toga parties, or goes to discussion meetings and talks about his mother and father. When you're into that stuff, and you get deeply into that stuff, and you want to grow in the image and like your creator, let me tell you something. Trust me on this. You separate yourself out from 85 to 90% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you hear what I just said? When you want to focus and you want to become and grow in the image and likeness of your creator, you've already separated yourself out from 85% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're separated. And trust me, when you think about that and that's all you want to do and you talk about it in groups, not only do you separate yourself out, you're going to have people that don't like you. And when you stop worrying about whether those people like you or not and start worrying about more about whether the God of your understanding likes you, you've come a long way, baby. Man, I'll tell you, you've broken the gravitational pull of this disease. You start working, and then you start making decisions as to who you're going to hang around with, and it has nothing to do with drinking or not drinking. It has to do with other stuff. And then you humble yourself to God, and you get down on your knees, and you want to humbly have God remove this stuff from you, and then you get involved in that spiritual axiom that says whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. And I want you to repeat that. Whatever you're disturbed, let me tell you how this disease works on people. When you don't figure out that spiritual axiom. That spiritual axiom, what it really is, it's like a compass. There's a story, this is a true story. I was trying to look it up so I could give you the actual details, but I remember it was from 1980s. There was an airline, I think it was a Korean airline, it took off. Some of you are old, my age, you'll remember this. And it was flying to Tokyo or somewhere, and it went over Russian airspace, and it was shot down. 280 people lost their lives. And it was over Russia, and there was a big argument as to
whether it was really over Russian airspace or not, and it was shot down. And they ultimately, what they ultimately found out is when the airline left wherever it was, New York, Kennedy, wherever the heck it left, and they plugged in to the computer, the route, they were off by one digit. So the airline was 1 degree off course. 1 degree. Now, when you're 1 degree off course, and you take off, and you're 5 miles out, or 10 miles out, or 100 miles out, or whatever it is, you don't realize you're off course. But when you're about, when all of a sudden you've traveled like 1,000 miles, or 2,000, or 3,000 miles, you know, all of a sudden you're 800 miles off into Russian airspace, and you're only 1 degree off when you start off. And you know what happens with us? What happens with us? That's why they say the drinking, the slip really happens 6 months to 2 years before the actual drinking. The drinking is the last thing that happens in the slip. The slip, let me tell you something. The slip happens when you're 10 years sober. The drinking happens when you're 12 years sober. The slip happens when you're 8 years sober. The popping the pills, going to the doctor and popping pills, happens when you're 12 years sober. The drinking happens when you're 14 years sober. The slip happens 5 years, 10 years before the drink. And the bottom line is the slip happens because you ignore the spiritual axiom. Because the spiritual axiom is the compass. That's the thing designed to point out, that's the spiritual MRI. That's the spiritual MRI. You know, every once in a while, you know, you can tell, look, what can I say about it? What can I say? I feel strongly about what I'm saying is based upon my life and what I read in the book. I feel certain and strongly about what I say. It's obvious that I come at people. I understand how I come at my sponsees. So I have a tendency sometimes to disturb people. I know you find that hard to believe. Every once in a while, somebody. Now the interesting thing is, I don't disturb a lot of people, and I don't understand that. But I mean, but every once in a while, a guy will get up out of the meeting, and he'll leave. Because he doesn't like something I said, because something I said disturbed him. Do you understand that? Unless that guy understands, you know, he's getting up because he's convicted. Something's convicted him. Unless he understands that it's not me that's disturbing him, he's disturbed that he's disturbed because he's disturbed. Unless he accepts the spiritual accident and gets out there and somewhere as he's driving home saying to himself, instead of saying, that asshole. Unless he somehow gets to the point and says, why does this bother me so much? You know what an alcoholic does, an active alcoholic does? He says, that guy's a jerk, that guy's an idiot, I can't believe that stupid guy, why aren't they listening to me, why don't they do that? And then he goes home and he has a drink. That's what a child does, by the way. That's what an alcoholic does. You know what an alcoholic does? It's not that I never get disturbable. It's not that I never get disturbed. It's not that you're never going to get disturbed. But what we do when we're on this spiritual journey is when we get disturbed, no matter what the cause, and that doesn't mean, it might be somebody who really is an individual that is wrong. No matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. And I bet my life on that spiritual axiom. I bet my life on that spiritual axiom. Sometimes I act on it quickly, sometimes slowly, but when I get disturbed by something somebody does or says or something going on in my life, you know, when I go through my initial, you know, feeling sorry for myself or whatever the heck you go through when you're focused on the person, and then I say, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. And I do whatever I have to do to try to figure that thing out, which may include praying, may include talking to a sponsor, may include writing it down. I do that deal. And you know what I find out? I found out some amazing stuff. That if you work on everything that bothers you in your life as it comes out, life is a great teacher. What I find out, when you find out what that thing is about, there's only so many personalities in the world. You get me? I mean, you may have 100 billion people, but there's only so many different types of personalities in the world. As you work on each personality that's bothering you, it's your boss, it's this, the situation, as I work on that one person that's bothering me, and I figure out what's wrong, you know, the consequences of my alcoholism. What is that old idea? What's going on? Why am I, maybe I'm expecting too much. Maybe I'm not accepting. When I work on that, and I see it and I resolve it, and all of a sudden one day the guy or the gal is talking, the thing is happening, it just doesn't bother me anymore. You know what I find out? I have now killed like 2 billion people that would actually bother me in this world. I'm not bothered by that person, I'm not bothered by any other person that I run into who is like that person. Does that make any sense to you? And the more I kill, then what I become is, the more I kill those people off, and I'm able to, when I say kill off the problem in me that has me resenting me, the more that happens, the more I find myself exceedingly undisturbable by life. Now, I'd be lying to you if I'd say nothing ever disturbs me. You know, my sponsor told me a long time ago, watch out for halt. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Man, you get me hungry, you get me lonely, you get me tired, you get me the stars in the right shape and something happens at the right time, I can blow a cork. But, you know, generally it happens like for 30 seconds. I make amends, I make it right, and it's gone. But compared to the way it used to be in my life, I mean, you know how it... I love sobriety. I've always loved sobriety. I've always thought, wherever I am in sobriety, I've always thought it was good. I thought it was good at 5 years. At 5 years, I said, man, this sobriety is great. I got to be honest with you. At 32 years, if I had sobriety now, the emotional sobriety now that I had at 5 years, I'd blow my brains out. It was pain. I had painful, horrible, always thinking about myself, always... Oh, you know, my sobriety, you could tell from the meetings. It was always going to a meeting with some sort. I needed a meeting. Now, there's nothing wrong with running the meetings because you need a meeting. But trust me, Now, listen, I still need meetings. I'm not saying I don't need meetings, but I don't generally go to meetings because I need meetings. I go to meetings because in my mind, there's probably going to be somebody there that I can help. Now, and I don't say it in like a braggadocious, you know what it says in the book that's going to happen. You know what it says that in the big book? It says you're going to stop worrying and lose thoughts about your own little plans and designs. You're going to start thinking about where you can help other people. That's one of the promises in the book. One of the things you will expect of a person that separated himself out is he's going to start thinking in terms of, how can I help other people? How can I help other people? That's how it's going to happen. So I'm exceedingly grateful for that. And that happens, part of the reason that happens is because of taking the spiritual axiom seriously. So the point is this: when you find yourself that something is disturbing you, something is upsetting you, something is eating your lunch, you should be exceedingly happy about that. You should say, thank you, God, you know, because it's pointing to something to me. Now it's like a spiritual MRI. I get to change. And I get to see what's going on, and it's going to, that's what does the trick. That's how it works for me. So thank you very much.